Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Blush. I'm your host, Hiva, and I think you're really going to love today's episode because we're going to talk about happiness, which is really fitting because it's May, it's Mental Health Month, although that really is not the real reason why I decided to do this. If I'm being completely honest, the real reason is because this girl right here needs it so badly. The way, like the number of meltdowns I've had this past week, and I mean, listen, that number is one, but the magnitude of the meltdown was equivalent to like 7 or 8. So we're just going to roll with it. Also, if you're watching on video, yes, I am wearing a bra on top of a shirt. I think I just haven't worn bras in so long that I've entirely forgotten how the concept works. I don't know. Anyway, back to my meltdown. So a few days ago, I come back from solid core. Now, if you guys don't know, my dog's really sick. Also, like, I could just have that tattooed on my forehead at this point. Like, we could rename the show. If you don't know, my dog is sick. I feel like it's how I start every episode. It's how I start every newsletter. Also, speaking of which, if you're in the Blush Academy, you may notice that if you just click through all of the recipes, I swear, I think instruction number one on almost every single recipe is soak your cashews overnight or for 10 minutes in hot water. Same thing here. I feel like it's like how I preface everything is my dog is sick. But if you guys don't know, my dog Samantha's really sick. I shouldn't have said her name. She's probably going to try to get in here now. Anyway, and among the many things that's wrong with her right now is she is so incontinent. Like the way that this bitch cannot hold her pee, like the instant that she stands, pretty much she pees. Excuse me. So I take her out. Do you guys know about how I have like a burping thing? Like I have like a problem with burping. It's really embarrassing. I have to burp myself like a baby. Otherwise, I'll spit up. Anyway, not the time. I was so proud of myself for not having gotten on tangents yet. I don't know, the bra thing, some may consider to be a tangent. Can you see it? I like want to make sure I'm not blocking it with the note cards. Yep. She's right outside the fucking studio. Girly, can you go relax for mommy? Anyway, so I come back from solid core and I take her out every 3 hours, right? And I immediately, like when I come back from solid core, I don't even go inside. I don't let the elevator leave. I just pull her into the elevator with me and take her out. Now, her stance when we're in the elevator going down, I could tell she could pee any second. And she has peed in said elevator many, many times. So it's not far-fetched to think that she could, right? And then it's a whole thing and I have to clean it, whatever. And I do clean it because I am a responsible dog owner. It's not like I just let my dog's urine sit. And you know what? Like the building should pray for her to pee in the fucking elevator because I leave that thing spotless. Like I pull out the alcohol. I use essential oils. Like it's left feeling like a fucking spa. Okay. Anyway. So also, do you guys hear? I think I'm coming down with something. I can hear it in my head, in my voice, and I kind of dig it. It's kind of giving Phoebe Sticky Shoes. If you don't know, it's from Friends. If you don't know, you're probably never going to know. Like if you haven't watched Friends by now, I'm not going to tell you to watch it. Like it's clearly not your thing, and that's fine. That's totally fine. Anyway, so we're going down in the elevator and she's just freaking out. She keeps looking at me. I'm like, we're about to be there. Just hold on just a few more minutes. Like, it's no big deal. Just hold on. And the elevator doors open and I barreled through the lobby to get her outside before she pees. I mean, it was like the stampede scene from Jumanji 1. I've not seen the redo of Jumanji, so I don't know if they, am I saying that weird? Okay, done with that. We're just gonna keep going. I barrel out. Now here's the part of the story I've neglected to mention. When the elevator doors open, there were two people in the lobby, the guys who work for the gallery that's below me, and they were like loading. They're constantly loading things. I don't really know what goes on with the gallery, quite frankly. I don't think I'm welcome. I don't think they like me a whole lot, which is understandable. I don't like myself that much either. They're right, honestly. They've judged me accurately as a dumb cunt. So I barrel out and literally go through one of the people. I mean, it was giving ghost vibes. Like, the way I just like didn't, my only concern was getting her to not pee inside. So the way that I just went through, like, I was like, just went through. He's like, whoa, and nearly fell over. And I just went because all I was trying to do was get her to not pee inside, right? So we go on our little walk. When we come back, I go up to him. I was like, listen, I'm so sorry. I can explain, like, you guys might not realize this, but my dog is really, really sick. She has a number of health conditions. Among them, one that we really can't place or diagnose or know how to treat, is that she has severe incontinence and, like, we cannot control it. And from her stance in the elevator, I could tell that she was on the verge of peeing any second. And all I was trying to do was get her to not pee on your brand new Sambas. And he's like, oh, no, it's fine. You just caught me off guard, which was very kind and generous of him, because it was so much more than catching him off guard. I mean, I don't even know how to explain it. It's like I acted like there wasn't a human being there. Like, I went through him. Like, it was so crazy. Like, it was so fucking nuts. And I fully own and take responsibility for it. So I was like, listen, you're being really nice about it. Like, it was a little more than startle. I did, like, literally go through you. And, you know, I'm just like elaborating on Sam and Sam's health condition. And I was like, listen, you guys might think, I was like, you guys, I know you guys think I'm a bitch. I know you think I'm a cunt. And, like, you're absolutely right. But what you don't know is how much I'm dealing with. And as I was just kind of explaining a bit about Sam's situation and how little I sleep and how, you know, how hard it is and how I'm just trying my best to, like, keep her alive and happy, I just started bawling, like, bawling. And then I came upstairs and I was like hyperventilating, crying, shaking, hyperventilating. I learned that word. But just like crying, shaking, freak. And then the rest of the day, like, I was so down. Like, I just felt so sad, just a deep, profound sense of sorrow. And it kind of continued really up until kind of right this moment when I got behind the mic. I mean, it's been lifting slowly, but it's really been really dark and really hard, like, to the point where I had a friend message me about something this morning and I was like, hey, I'm going to be really honest with you. I'm going to try to respond to you tomorrow. I don't have the capacity to respond to this today because I'm like, I don't want to use really dark languaging, but I was like, I'm not well right now. Like, I'm really not well. Like, it's been hard. And, you know, I've been talking to my mom about it. Okay, you know what? I don't want to get, like, too deep into it. Let's just get into it. But, like, I need this episode as much as whoever is listening who feels like you need it. I see you. I feel you. We all get there. And don't, My biggest concern in life in what I do is I don't want to ever present myself like I'm perfect and I have it all figured out. I'm so far from it. The reason that I do this is because I'm so far from perfect, right? Like there's a lot of room for upward trajectory and there still is. I've come a really long way in every topic, I would say, but I'm still far from perfect. Like, yeah, I don't act like a fucking lunatic in my relationships and pick fights left, right, and center, but that doesn't mean that I act super sane all the time either. Like, there's always room for improvement. Yeah, my digestion is pretty good now, and I, you know, my constipation is far better, but I still deal with things. Like, there are still things that I'm experimenting and trying to fix. You know, certainly I would say overall my moods are better, and I don't, when I get into low moods, I think that I pull out of it a lot faster than I used to, and I don't quite let myself wallow as much as I used to. Nevertheless, I still deal with all of these things. Okay. Anyway, now if you're a longtime listener, you might recall that I've done an episode very similar to this a few years ago. I'm not gonna like gaslight you and lie and pretend that I didn't do it. You know, wait, speaking of gaslighting, I don't know why this just popped in my head, but you guys know the Cadbury cream eggs, right? So years ago, maybe like 10 years ago or something, there was this whole thing that happened where one year everyone was like, wait, are the Cadbury cream eggs smaller this year? And there was so much chatter about it. And Cadbury was like, no, the eggs aren't smaller. You're just bigger. And people were like, I don't think so. And then there were a bunch of people who had them stockpiled from previous years. So they're taking photos and they're like, no, they're like literally smaller. Like, why are you trying to gaslight us on a national level? Like, they're not like, no, like they're literally smaller. It was just the result of shrinkflation. But I just thought of that. I just think sometimes gaslighting is really funny. Okay, anyway. See what I mean? She's not perfect. She's not a perfect wellness girl. Like I'm still toxic in some ways, I guess. No, I just like, that's kind of harmless, but it's so like, do you really not think Cadbury, it's 2024. Well, it was 2014 at the time. I think, I don't know. It was definitely in the teens. Like, do you really think people aren't going to notice? They're going to notice. Like, how are you? It's like that TikTok sound. What was it? It's like, no one's going to know. They're going to know. No one's going to know. But like, they're going to know. Like, someone's going to figure it out. You can't get away with shit like this anymore. It's not the 1950s. Anyway, so if you're a longtime listener, you might be like, oh, haven't we literally already done this episode? Yes. So a few years ago, it was 5 scientifically proven ways to increase your happiness levels. And now we're doing 7 because, you know, a few years have gone by and I've learned a lot of new things and we're adding to it. We're expanding. We're growing as a person. Who knows? Maybe we'll do this episode again in 2 to 3 years and it'll be 9 ways. We'll see. But you know, the premise of this episode, almost in a weird way, is I used to research shit like this so much. Like in my first job out of college, I worked in policy and all I would do was sit around and research wellness topics in between, you know, doing like my actual job for a few minutes here and there. Probably shouldn't admit this, but whatever. My former boss at that job reached out to me a few years ago and was talking to me about how lecherous of a person he is and how much he used to hit on me and shit like that. And I was like, I literally, like, what? Excuse me, what? Like, you're admitting out loud that you got away with workplace sexual harassment. And what, are you upset that you got away with it? Like, dude, are you trying to get in trouble for it? Like, I've literally had reporters reach out to me about sexual harassment at this organization, and I've always declined to comment. Would you like me to comment? Should I print out this chat? Like, how disgusting is that? Anyway, in between being sexually harassed by his own admittance by my boss, I also would research health and wellness topics. And one of the things I would research a lot was happiness. And I think honestly, it's because it was the first time I was starting to really realize like there was something wrong with me. Because I think that in high school and before that, anytime I was upset or unhappy with my life circumstances, I always blamed it on my life circumstances, namely living in my parents' house, right? I've talked a lot about how things were really chaotic growing up, and there was a lot of, you know, fighting and anger. And also my parents were really strict, like really strict, and wouldn't let me do a lot of the things that I wanted to do. So like beyond just like the chaotic things, there's just normal teenage stuff of, you know, I want to go to the club till 5 a.m. with my friends and, you know, have sleepovers and get hammered, and you guys won't let me do those things, you know? What monsters. Someone call Child Protective Services. But, you know, so I always thought, oh, once I'm out of the house and I have freedom and I can make my own rules and whatever, then I'll be happy, right? So I go to college and I'm out of the house and I can make my own rules and I have freedom. And there were still, and I mean, certainly there were, you know, times where I was really happy in college and there were times where I was really upset, but then I would blame the unhappiness on the fact that I went to school in Colonial Williamsburg and it was just a shit town and there was nothing to do. And I think that's when I realized how much of a city girl I am and how much I just enjoy having access to things. That's my big thing. It's not like I need clubs to be open till 5 a.m. or shit like that. What I really need is access. And so then I would think, okay, well, once like I live on my own in a city, then I'll be happy, right? So I finish college, I move to DC, I'm living by myself, I have all of the things, I have the job that I want, I have friends, I have all of the things. So I didn't have a boyfriend, but whatever. I knew enough to not blame my problems on not having a boyfriend. At that point, when I was still unhappy, I was like, okay, now I'm the common denominator, right? I can't blame it on my parents. I can't blame it on Williamsburg. I can't blame it on any of these things. This is a me problem now, and I need to figure out how to fix it. So I used to sit around and I would research things like, how can I be happier? And like, what foods will make me feel happier? And what things can I do to make me feel happier? And sorry if you guys can hear us say I'm trying to break down the door out there, but we are not going to open the door to the whole chaos situation that went down a few weeks ago. Because you know what? I'm coming down with something. And quite frankly, it's a miracle that I'm here right now. The amount of brain fog that I had this morning, like you would not believe. Anyway, so that's when I kind of started to realize that this was a me thing. And the answer that I would come across over and over and over again was that over 50% of our happiness levels are actually genetically predetermined. And there's very little that we can do about changing our happiness levels, which if you're someone who's unhappy and you're researching that, that's like really not what you want to hear. You know what I mean? Like, that's pretty much the worst thing you could hear. Like, oh, okay, so I guess I just lost the genetic lottery and I have to be unhappy for the rest of my life. Like, that sucks. Anyway, so then 2 to 3 years ago, I was actually researching something completely unrelated. I was researching the Tetris effect, which is this neuroscience concept that we're not going to talk about right now because not related. And I came across this psychologist named Sean Aker, who he's a positive psychologist, which is a field of psychology that I think is relatively new within psychology. And so traditional psychology usually tries to get you from below baseline to baseline, right? It's treating things like depression, anxiety, etc., things that take you below baseline, whereas positive psychology, the intention is to get you from baseline to above baseline, to thriving, to doing better, to excelling, which I find so interesting and so fascinating. And so I started binging so much of his content and I read some of his books. And that's when I recorded the first happiness episode, the 5 tools that you can do to increase your happiness levels. Sam, you're going to need to calm the fuck down. This is completely unacceptable behavior. I'm also terrified that there's some kind of like bike event going on outside. I don't know, guys. There's just like millions of bike riders and they're setting up some kind of stage. I mean, I assume it's some kind of like race type situation. And then I think the finish line happens to be right next to my apartment, which like fucking fantastic. And they were setting up a stage, it looked like. So I'm really scared that at the finish line, there's going to be some kind of concert that's going to start while we're recording. Ooh, I have to sneeze. And I'm going to try to do it away from the mic if it comes. And yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Sorry about that. Also, on sound, the way that sound gets into this apartment, last night I was laying in bed and I don't know what the fuck was going on, but every 60 to 180 seconds, there would be clapping and cheering, like the way that you would hear clapping and cheering at a concert or something, you know what I mean? But in between, it was dead silent. So I don't know what it was. It clearly wasn't a concert because I would have heard the music. I mean, I'm sure there was something happening in between the clapping and cheering. Otherwise, that would be a fascinating thing. Like, there's just a group of 300 people gathered who were on cue clapping and cheering every 60 seconds. That would be an event I'd like to witness. No, I don't know what the fuck it was, but I was just laying in bed being like, what could this event possibly be? Whatever it is, I think got me sick. Also, like, really throughout my neck, I, in the middle of the night, was like, oh my God, I'm going to be paralyzed. Like, I'm never going to be able to get up again. It's actually not that bad. It's not as bad as it was a couple years ago when I fucked it. Enough. We're going back to the subject. Where was I at? I don't know. So I was doing, yeah, Sean Acker. I don't know. Anyway, so Sean Acker is, I guess, a Harvard professor, and he looked at his Harvard students and he found that 1 out of 5 of them were truly flourishing. They were happy, they were productive, they were energetic, they were resilient, and they were performing well. And so he set out to study them and see what they have in common. And then after that, he traveled the world and he also looked at different communities and professions. And through studying all of these people and seeing what the people who were doing well in life were doing, he came up with these 5 scientifically proven ways to increase your happiness levels. And ultimately, the reason that we're talking about this is, like, A, of course, we all want to be happy, right? Isn't that kind of the point? Like, is the, like, ultimately, when you break it down, anything that you want in your life, ultimately, you want it because you think it's going to make you happier, right? Because, like, why the fuck else? Like, everything that we do, when you think about it, is actually in service of happiness. But what's interesting is we tend to have the relationship flipped. So we tend to think that, oh, once I get the new job, or once I have the boyfriend, or once I have the girlfriend, or once I have the partner, or, you know, once I make this amount of money, or once I get out of my credit card debt, or once I pay off my student loans, or once I have this new shirt, or once I get a Chanel bag, or once I get, you know, that cute Celine crop top that everyone has that has the stripes and it says Celine on the waistband, or once I, you know, whatever it is, insert your thing. Once I have this number of followers, once I build my new business, once I get that new job, once I get the money, the friends, the whatever, then I'll be happy. But the truth is that it's actually usually reverse. Usually you actually have to be happier in order to be able to achieve these goals and dreams. But everything also is cyclical. Anyway, happiness really affects so many facets of your life, including your relationships. Positive people are perceived as more attractive, more trustworthy. Happiness is one of the top things that people look for in a mate. And happiness also is very contagious. So think about, have you ever been on a plane with someone who is really, really anxious, and then you start to get anxious? Like, let's say the plane lands if no one gets up, you would probably sit the fuck down in your seat and you just wait and you would get out in a normal, orderly fashion. But what always happens is some fucking asshole stands up as soon as the plane lands. You're still taxiing on the tarmac and some asshole is up there anxious to get their shit and exit the plane. So then everyone else gets up and then it's just pandemonium of people just freaking the fuck out to get out of this plane. And it doesn't fucking have to be like that. And that's because anxiety is contagious. But guess what? So is happiness. Happiness is also contagious. They've done so many studies on this. And if you just put one calm, happy person in a room, it'll start to spread to everyone else, just like the reverse tends to happen. And the thing is, happiness doesn't just affect your relationships. It also affects every facet of your life, including your work performance. They've done studies on this, and happy people are selling more by 37%. They're 31% more productive. They're 40% more likely to receive a promotion over 2 years. Their immune system improves. They tend to live longer. They're 3 times more creative. Their intelligence rises. Specifically at MetLife, they found that top 10%, oh my God, I don't know if I'm going to be able to word this. The top 10% most optimistic sales force was outselling the other 90% by 89%. Okay, that was a word salad of percentages, but I think you get the idea. Happiness matters. Happiness affects your life. And the thing is, happiness is a choice. It's way less genetic than we ever thought. There are clear, actionable steps that you can take to improve your happiness levels. And these are the 7, and we're going to take them together. So let's get into it. The first one is having meaningful social interactions. When I think about my life, the phases in my life where I've been the most happy are also the phases in my life where I was going out and socializing the most. Like beginning of college, I was really happy because I was making friends. I was going out. I was having fun. There was a summer after college, not the first summer after college, the summer after that, where I had a really great clique of friends and we were just together all the time. And that was a really, really happy time. And then when that clique kind of fizzled, I got really, really depressed because that really was just such a source of joy and happiness in my life. When else was I really happy? A couple years after that, I had a really great little group of friends, including my friend Katie, who got married a few months ago, who I know I've talked about on the podcast. And there were a few of us and we would just hang out all the time and we were like literally at each other's apartments every single day. We just had such a nice vibe going. When I first started dating Ozzy, we were going out and having fun so much. Community really is the most important thing. They actually say social connection is the greatest predictor of happiness and also the greatest predictor of how long you will live. It actually is as predictive of how long you will live as obesity, high blood pressure, and smoking. So if you are an overweight person who has high blood pressure and is a smoker, might I suggest having a really great circle of friends? Because maybe you can outdo the effects of the other three this way. No, but in all seriousness, it really does affect things. And one of the best ways that you can actually cultivate this, and this is what I talked about in last episode, this is what Sean Aker advocates for, is this little tool where you wake up every single day, and he recommends doing this for at least 21 days straight, not missing a single day. The very first thing that you do in the morning when you first open your eyes is take 2 minutes and write out a text or an email or, you know, I don't know, like carrier pigeon, whatever message to someone who you appreciate and just tell them why you appreciate them. So it can be a friend, it can be a coworker, it can be, you know, a former teacher, a mentor, a family member, a lover, former lover. Probably don't do your former lover. That could get kind of awkward. You know, I don't know. I mean, whatever. Who am I to judge? Anyway, that's the idea. And I actually did this when I recorded this episode the first time around a few years ago. And I remember by day two, I felt kind of disingenuous because I felt like I was doing this really nice thing and saying these really nice things, but it was for self-serving reasons. But by day 10 or so, it just became routine and very normal, and I really enjoyed it. Like, it just became this really fun thing. And the process of scanning and trying to find new people, because you kind of start to run out of people. So just the process of scanning and thinking of people to message and what I could say, that was also really fun because it was kind of reminding myself of all of these positive effects that have happened in my life. Now, of the five tools that Sean Aker talks about in his book, this is the most powerful one. Studies show that doing it for 3 days in a row makes your brain addicted to it, and your brain spends all day long running on the positivity from doing that. That's why it's recommended to do it very first thing in the morning. And if you do it 21 days in a row, then your social connections become incredibly strong. And as we talked about, social connection is truly the greatest predictor of happiness. It's the greatest predictor of your health and your success and so many things in this life. So my assignment for you guys, if you want to take it, is to try this for 21 days. Every day, very first thing in the morning, open your phone, send the message, set a timer for 2 minutes so that you're actually writing for 2 minutes and send it. Now, I personally am not going to do this, A, because I've done it already, but B, because I think it's really easy for me to send messages to people and do things virtually. Where I think I have a lot of deficit is actually in real life spending time with people. That's where I will go to such lengths to avoid interacting with people in real life. And I do think it's because my mental health just isn't in a great place right now, but it's also making my mental health worse. Like that day when I had that breakdown that started with the gallery guys. And by the way, gallery guys sounds like it's like the name of, I don't know, a TV show, a band, an album. Like, it could be so many things. I'm just saying, free idea. Anyway, I was crying to my mom on the phone. I was like, am I ever going to feel better? Like, blah, blah, blah. Like, I just don't know what to do. I feel like I do so much self-care. I take such great care of myself. I eat so healthy. I do all the right things. Why do I still feel like this? And she's like, well, sweetie, you feel like this because you have no joy in your life. Like, I just love mom's abilities to be so point blank and just give it to us. Like, she's like, of course you're a depressed bitch. You literally do nothing fun. And she's like, when was the last time you hung out with someone? When was the last time you went out? Like, you have no joy. All you do is work and take care of Sam. That's all you do. Your entire life revolves around this dog and your job. And she's like, I know how much it means to you. I know you feel like you're helping people, but you need more balance in your life. And specifically, you need joy. You need to go out. You need to socialize. You need these things. That's what's missing in your life. And she's right. So personally, and I'm sharing this with you guys because I really want to be intentional about this and I want to do it. And it's funny, I never adhere to my goals when they're my personal goals, but when they're in service of my career, my job, which is helping people, it's helping you guys, that's when I actually stick to it. So I'm sharing it because I want to hold myself accountable. I'm setting an intention to go out at least once a week, ideally twice a week. Now, I'm not saying I have to drink every time I go out, you know, because that's always a big thing for me. It's like, well, I don't feel like drinking and like blah, blah. And then if I drink, it's going to be harder to go to the gym in the morning or go to Solid Core. Let's be real, not the gym. But fuck all that. I don't have to drink every time. I'm fine missing Solid Core once a week. Like, that's not a big deal. And like, I just need to force myself to do it. So this week, I'm supposed to be going to the Knicks game with Ozzy, which actually technically is happening the night before this airs. Obviously I don't record the podcast on Tuesday. Sorry if you didn't realize that. And then this Thursday, I'm going to my friend Anna's comedy show. If you're in New York City, actually hit me up and come to the comedy show. She's really trying to sell tickets and it should be a good time. So yeah, I'm just sharing it with you guys. And next week I will report back on hopefully having done both social activities. But yeah, that's my plan. If you guys want to share your plan with me so I can hold you accountable, just like I'm letting you guys hold me accountable, then we can do a little accountability system. Okay, the second way, before I get into it, let me tell you a little story. So this past December was one of the harder months of my life because that's when all the shit with Sam started. That's when her health really started dipping. That's when, you know, we got news that her blood work was off again and that her white blood cell issue that she's had come back. That's when the peeing really started. Like that, and Ozzy also went back to Australia for work. So I was dealing with all of this alone. It was a very dark and very lonely time in my life. I also started getting up at six every day, which was a very drastic change from my body after for years and years and years getting up at like nine every day. So that was, you know, really intense. I was feeling really sleep deprived. I was just going through so much, like worrying mentally, emotionally about my dog, but also physically being so drained from taking care of her and having no answers. Despite all of this, it was weirdly one of the happiest times in my life. And I kept being like, why am I so happy? Like, it's so weird. Like, I have this pep in my step that is so not in accordance with everything else that's happening. And then I realized what it was. It was because I started doing solid core that month. So all of a sudden I was doing this exercise that was really new to me. And that brings me to number two. The number two way to increase your happiness levels is to move more. Now, exercise is found to have the same antidepressant effect as pharmaceuticals for the first 6 months. Within 2 years of exercising, rates of relapsing into depression fell by 70%. And you might be thinking, oh yeah, of course it's the endorphins. It's actually not the endorphins. Endorphins are very short-lived. Like, yes, you feel it in the moment. Like this morning, I was like, literally on the way to solid core, I was like, I hope a car hits me. Like, I can't deal with life anymore. And then by the end of solid core, I was in a great mood. That's endorphins, but that shit doesn't last. The reason that exercise actually makes you happier is because when you exercise, you imprint this idea to yourself that your behaviors matter, that your decisions matter, and you tend to make better decisions and have better behavior throughout the day. Exercise is thought to be a starter drug for good habits, and that's why it increases your happiness levels. So as you're listening to this, you're like, okay, how do I implement this? I would pick one type of movement that you don't already do and add it to your routine. So if right now you're completely sedentary, that's great. That's actually a really great starting point because you don't have to do a whole lot to be able to reap the benefits of this, right? Just add like 5 to 10 to, you know, if you really want to go for it, 20-minute walks a couple times a day. I really recommend walking after meals. It does so much for your digestion and your metabolic health. It really is such a great way to go. I feel like my voice is really going in and out. I'm sorry, guys. But she's pushing through. She does the most for you guys always, except to put her bra on in the correct order. No, it's a vibe. It's a look, right? I don't know. I just wanted to try something new. I mean, how many fucking white shirts can I wear? Anyway, so so pick one type of movement, you know, just add on to what you already do. If you already walk, but you don't do much else, try finding like 10-minute workout YouTube videos that you can add on. If you currently do cardio, but you do no strength training, try adding on some strength training. If you currently do strength training, but you don't do cardio, try adding on some cardio. Personally, I do a lot of solid core. I walk a decent amount, but that's more or less it. I don't really do any cardio. And the other thing that I don't really do is I like solid core and walking and stuff are really great for type 1 muscle fibers, which is great, but I don't activate my type 2 muscle fibers a lot. And I'm not going to get into what that means because I don't understand it that well. But I was having a conversation about it with my EMS trainer, Tatiana, who I fucking love. And she was recommending some stuff to me. And so what I want to start doing is this sprinting and jump squat interval, where she was saying basically to be able to activate type 2 muscle fibers, you have to do the type of movement that you wouldn't be able to do. Like, you would need 3 minutes of rest in between sets to be able to do it again. If you don't need a rest that's long, then you're not hitting the type 2 muscle fibers. So we came up with this protocol where I do sprints for like 10 to 50 seconds and then rest for 3 to 4 minutes and do 3 sets of that, and then do 3 sets of jump squats again with that like 3 minute rest in between. So I think I did this yesterday, and I actually did it because the rests are so long, like you're barely actually exercising. I was able to do it through my morning routine. So I did the sprints, and then I went and I like flossed and put in my contacts, and then I did the sprints, and then I brushed my teeth, and then I did the sprints, and then I like made my lemon water and, you know, drank that, and then I did the jump squat, or you know what I mean? Like, I just was doing my normal morning routine, but just taking a few seconds in between things to do the cardio portion and really hit that type 2 muscle fiber. And just, it's something new and novel for my brain, which is always exciting. And because it's a new type of movement, it's also like imprinting that like, oh my God, look at me, I'm so amazing. Like, I'm doing these great things for myself. You know, just novelty, changing things up and doing that movement is so fucking important. Speaking of movement, another thing I noticed, this was like literally 10 years ago. So I've gone in and out of exercise throughout my life. Like, in high school, I got really into it. In college, I kind of fell off. But then after college, I completely fell off. Like, fucking working a 9-to-5, I was like, when the fuck am I supposed to exercise? So I just like never exercised again until a little bit after I left my 9-to-5 job and I was working remotely. I joined what became the Equinox. It wasn't called Equinox yet at the time. And I got a trainer for Reformer Pilates one-on-one because I really wanted to fix a lot of like issues in my body alignment and spine, and just like get like a stronger core and things like that. And I noticed that when I would leave Pilates, I felt so calm, so serene, like so, like it was a completely different headspace. And the thing is, it wasn't that hard of an exercise. It's not like I was breaking a sweat. It's not like I was like really releasing endorphins. Like, not much was happening. And I couldn't figure it out until one day I realized exactly what was happening. It's because when I did the Reformer Pilates, I hate like when you add an extra S to thing, like it's a weird pet peeve, but here I am doing it, just pissing myself off. Anyway, so I noticed when I would do the Reformer Pilates, the trainer would cue a lot of things for me. Like, if with every exercise, there were like 10 different things I had to pay attention to. It was like, pull your shoulders down, you know, pull your belly button towards your spine, you know, do this, do that. So in every exercise, I was thinking about so many things that my mind literally couldn't wander. Like, I couldn't sit and think about like the assignment that I had to finish and, you know, how Sam needed to go out and how I had dishes to do and like what was I gonna wear tomorrow night. Like, none of these thoughts could happen because I was so focused on the 20 different body cues that I had. And so it ended up being this deep meditative experience. Like, I had to be extremely mindful. And that brings me to the third tool, which is mindfulness. And a study at Google showed that when you just spend 2 minutes a day practicing mindfulness, happiness levels go up by 10%. But what's even more interesting is the stress levels of the people around you goes down significantly. So it doesn't just benefit yourself, it benefits other people. And the cool thing is that you can feel the benefits of it in just 2 minutes a day. So if you're someone who's like, I can't meditate, whatever, first of all, like, if you think you can't meditate, then you need it so much more more than other people. And if you're someone who says like, oh, I don't have time to meditate, there's this like old saying of like a monk or something telling someone like they should meditate 20 minutes a day. And the person was like, oh my God, no, I don't like have time to meditate for 20 minutes a day. And he's like, oh, okay, totally, totally. I completely understand. No, you should meditate for an hour a day. And the person was like, what? And he's like, if you can't carve 20 minutes into your day to do something, then you are so wildly inefficient with your time that you need to be meditating for a full fucking hour to get things going again. Like there was something vastly wrong with you. So A, there's that, but B, we're talking 2 minutes a day, 2 minutes, 120 seconds. Anyone can do anything for 120 seconds, okay? Just ask Kimmy Schmidt. Anyway, so all that you need to do is set a timer on your phone and then put it away. And for 2 minutes, just inhale and exhale and pay attention to your inhales and exhales. And the thing is, you will get distracted when doing that. When people are like, oh, I can't meditate, it's not for me. No, everyone struggles with this. There's no one who's just like born with exceptional concentration abilities. We're all the product of our time. We're all the product of screens and TikTok. And, you know, the shorter the content, the better. And our attention spans are all shit. That's why you work at it. Like, I remember one time, this is unrelated, but related, many years ago, like 15 years ago, someone was like, oh my God, your skin is so amazing. What do you use? And I was like, oh, I use acne cream. And she's like, that's wild. You have no acne. And I was like, yeah, because I use acne cream. Like, what? How does that not make sense to you? Like, yeah, that's why. You know, like it's not like people act like everything that you have is just like you just have it. Like, no, you generally are doing something in order to have that thing. People who have good concentration don't just magically have good concentration. They're doing something to have good concentration. People who are able to be mindful all the time aren't just like magically mindful. No, they're creating that condition. A similar thing last week, I was sharing something on my Instagram about Korean melons and how they really help me poop. And someone DM'd me and she's like, wow, but like you eat so healthy. Why do you struggle with the poop so much? And I was like, no, I poop because I eat like this. Like, do you, again, like how does that not make sense to people? Like to me, it's so obvious. Like you do something in order to get something. That's just how life works. Like nothing is magically handed out to people. And yes, some people are just born with like rare talents at things, but they also are cultivating it and bringing it out. That's how they're getting good at it, you know? And also like things that you're not working for, like really don't mean as much. Anyway. So yeah, just set a timer for 2 minutes, just inhale and exhale and watch your breath, and you will get distracted and that's okay. Just bring yourself back to it. And guess what? Over time, maybe the next time you won't get less distracted because things go up and down, but over time you will notice a downward trajectory in how much you get distracted and you will get better at this. And you know what? I have my own meditation practice. I do various things. I do NRPs a lot. I do breath work a lot, but I'm going to add 2 minutes of mindfulness meditation onto what I already do. I can't do it first thing in the morning because I have to like rush out the door like a bomb went off in order to take Sam out before she pees everywhere. But I can find a time throughout my day, and I recommend finding a time. For most people, first thing in the morning is the most effective because you can just get it done. But if that doesn't work for you, find another time. I'm going to find a time where I can do it consistently every day and just sit and do it. It's really going to change your life. And I'll be right there doing it with you. And we can hold ourselves, we can hold each other accountable. Seriously, if you're listening to this and you're like, wow, I want an accountability buddy for this, I'm trying to decide if I should tell you to DM me or email me. Honestly, email me. My DMs can get like chaotic. So email theblushpod. Yeah, theblushpod@gmail.com. Email me and say that you want an accountability buddy to do the happiness stuff, and I'll figure something out. Okay. Moving right along. So my mom and I talk on the phone constantly, right? Like literally every single night when I take Sam for her last walk of the night, I call my parents, but I also might call them more than that throughout the day. Is that like kind of embarrassing? I don't know. I don't think so. Like I am proud of how good of a relationship I have with my mom. We've worked really, really hard to get here. Anyway, one of the things that my mom and I do a lot when we talk is we will reminisce on random funny things that have happened in the past. Like recently, we were on the phone and we were reminiscing on this time that we had guests. This was like so many years ago. I think I was 11 or 12 or something. And we had guests over. And, you know, in Persian culture, when you have guests over, like even if it's like literally someone stopping by because they like forgot their bell to your house. Also, what a weird thing to forget at someone's house. Why did I say that? Like sunglasses, because they forgot their, like who is taking their belt off at people's homes and forgetting it? Also, I literally haven't worn a belt since, I think since like 2006 when it was trendy to wear those big belts on top of, like not like a functional belt, like it wasn't hooking into pants or anything. Do you guys remember that look where it was like a big belt that people wore on top of their clothes? How fucking weird was that shit? Anyway, we just had some weird style back then. So yeah, in Persian culture, if someone comes over, even if it's for the, like literally they're running in and out, you will offer them tea. You'll usually bring over a giant fruit plate. You'll bring over sweets. Like at bare minimum, they're getting that if they're not getting a whole ass meal. So, my dad was having, you know, some kind of like, probably someone that he had some kind of business relationship with over, and it was the whole family. So there were like some young men who I'm sure I thought were cute because I was so fucking boy crazy, and the mom and stuff. And so before they were coming over, we were going through glasses to serve tea in. And my mom had these beautiful glasses that were handmade. And she told me and one of our family friends, she's like, listen, there's a hole in one of these glasses. And we're like, what do you mean there's a hole in the glass? And she's like, well, they're handmade. So one of the glasses that just like the glass didn't fully fuse at the bottom. It's not like a crack. It's not, it's just literally a hole. So can you guys take all of the glasses, fill them with water, see which one's leaking so we don't serve them in that one? And we're like, totally, of course we can do that. So we go through all the glasses. We thought we found the one with the hole in it, whatever. They come over, they're sitting, we're all having tea. And one of the guys at some point is like, I'm so sorry, but I think there's a hole in this glass. And the three of us were like, what? And he's like, no, I think there's a hole in the glass. And we're like instead of being like, oh yeah, no, I know. Like, sorry. I guess we collectively, without even talking to each other, all three of us decided like, no, let's just gaslight him instead. So we're like, a hole in the glass? And he's like, yeah. And we're like, do you mean it's like cracked? And he's like, no, 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 it's not cracked. There's literally a hole in the glass and it's leaking. And we're like, but how could that be? He's like, no, I don't know. I feel like I'm going crazy. Am I going crazy? We're like, maybe, because how would there be a hole in the glass? Like, how could such a thing even happen? And so we obviously changed out his glass. I mean, just literally dictionary definition, gaslighting this man. Like, no, you're definitely crazy. Like, there's no way there's a hole in the glass. Like, how would that happen? So my mom and I are just on the phone retelling the story to each other, like as though we weren't there when it fucking happened, and dying laughing. And that brings me to my fourth thing. And that is to relive positive moments. And think about it. How much do you know people who do this? Like, do you know people who, like, when you're together, you're constantly retelling stories of like funny shit that happened? And it's not even like you're telling it for a third person who hasn't heard the story. It's like me and my mom, you're just reliving these positive moments. Or I feel like old people do this a lot. Like, do you ever find like old people are like telling stories from their glory days? That's why unconsciously subconsciously, that's why we're all doing this. It's because reliving positive memories increases our happiness levels, specifically because our brain can't distinguish between the actual event having had happened and us just recalling the memory. And so when we recall the memory like this, our brain is experiencing it all over again. And if it was a positive experience, it's going to feel that same kind of positivity. There was actually a study with the National MS Society that showed that by reliving their positive experiences every night, they were able to drop their pain medication because it just made them feel so much better. And when we feel happier and we're more positive, our physicality improves too, including we feel less pain. How fucking crazy is that? So here's how you implement this. Every night, scan through your day and find one pleasant thing that happened. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It doesn't have to be, you know, like the most important, the biggest, whatever. It's just one positive thing that happened and recount it in detail. What happened? Who were you with? What were you wearing? How were you feeling? Who else was around? What was the weather like? What was your environment like? Really, the more detailed that you can be and the more you can re-experience it through all of your five senses, the better. I think it's really helpful to actually journal on this because when you journal on it, you're forced to do it in more detail. And then once you're done recounting it in the journal, close your eyes and put yourself back in that place and make sure to do it in first person. So don't close your eyes and visualize the scenario such that you can see yourself. You want to experience it again, relive it through your own body, experience it through your senses, through your eyes, and do that every single night. Okay, now something fun that you guys might not know about me is that I am obsessed with my to-do list. Obsessed. I have this app that I downloaded I think I got it in my first iPhone. Like I paid, I think $5.99 for it, which not only is so fucking expensive, but also a marker of the time because I feel like there aren't really paid apps anymore. Instead, you now have to get a subscription once you have the app. But back then there was this phenomenon where there would be paid apps and you just paid one time and then you use the app for free. So this was a pretty fucking expensive app. I mean, $5.99 is a lot. Like I'd heard of $1.99, $2.99, but $6 fucking dollars. And this is what, like 12 years ago or some shit. I mean, there's massive inflation right now. $6 at the time, that would probably be like $35 now. No, I don't. The way that I sound like I'm 150 years old sometimes. No, but it was kind of expensive. It's this to-do list app. And I don't know if there are better ones now. So I'm almost hesitant to say what it is called because there probably are better to-do list apps. But I've just put so much work into this one that like we're here, we're together for life now. So I have different categories for my to-do lists. And then you can set things by date and you can put timers and you can put reminders and you can make things repeat and you can put tags on them and you can add notes and details and you can add attachments. I mean, you can do custom colors, which as you can imagine, this bitch did. I mean, it is a very intricate, elaborate to-do list app. I fucking love it. And I get pretty detailed on my to-do lists, like pretty fucking detailed. But I noticed something when I was in law school. So something about law school is your entire grade in a class for the semester is just your final exam. That's it. You have no other grades. Technically, they can incorporate participation, which also includes like how you perform and cold calling, but it's really your final exam. That's it. So final exam time is very high pressure. Also, law school exams aren't Like, you're not just tested on what you were taught. You're actually literally not tested on what you're taught generally. So, like, let's say, like, it's criminal law and, like, you learn what murder means. You're not going to get a test that's like, what's murder? And you have to, like, explain all the, you know, parts of murder. Instead, you get this very long fact pattern where there may or may not be murder, and you have to identify it yourself and assess whether there was murder or not. Like, it's very hard. It's not like any other test I've ever seen. It's so stressful. It's extremely time sensitive, and it's so overwhelming. It's like nothing else. And law school, like, the time when you're studying for law school exams is truly a stress like I've never experienced, and I will quite frankly never experience again in my life. It's really fucking chaotic. And I would notice that whenever we'd get to law school exam time, my to-do list app would get really fucking nutty. Like, the most basic things would start to go on my to-do list, like brush your hair, brush your teeth, like things that I'm going to do that whether it's on the to-do list or not. Shower, get dressed. I put things on retroactively sometimes. Like, if I like did the dishes, I would then go write dishes and then cross it off of the to-do list. I mean, there were times, I'm not even joking, where I put masturbate on my to-do list. Like, that's how nutty I was getting. It would be like walk Sam 1, walk Sam 2, walk, like all of Sam's walks and for the day were on my to-do list. Again, things that I was gonna do. It's, that's not how, like, the point of a to-do list is to put the things that you were gonna forget to do. These were things that I 100% was gonna do anyway, but I was still adding them to the list and then checking them off. And I remember, just as like a very self-aware and astute person, I was able to see that the reason that I did this is because it made me feel good to check things off of a to-do list. And that brings us to the number 5 scientifically proven way to increase your happiness levels. And that is to add things, or it's really to make and keep agreements with yourself. It's not just to like add everything to do to your to-do list. That's not it. But it's to make and keep agreements with yourself. And the more that you can do this, the better you're going to feel about yourself ultimately. I'm actually doing this right now. I'm doing the agreement that I have with myself right now is I'm doing a no spend month. So I decided for the month of May, every month I set intentions for myself. And for the month of May, I have a few, but among them is that I don't want to spend any money on anything that isn't an absolute necessity. I realize I've been spending a lot of money. I've been doing it really mindlessly. And I feel like actually the reason that I've been doing it is because I think I've been numbing myself from the depression. And I think the reason that I've been extra raw the past few days is because I have taken away my numbing tool. I've taken away my numbing device. And so now I'm feeling all of the feelings. And actually, this really goes back to dopamine and slow versus fast dopamine. So fast dopamine are rapid spikes in dopamine that occur in response to immediate rewards or pleasurable experiences. It's associated with instant gratification and the anticipation of rewards. So examples of this are eating highly palatable foods like processed foods, engaging in adrenaline-inducing activities, shopping, certain kinds of drugs, and early stages of dating. Even though fast dopamine provides a temporary feeling of pleasure and excitement, it's really short-lived. Slow dopamine, on the other hand, is steady, sustained release of dopamine over time. It's associated with long-term rewards and feelings of satisfaction and well-being. It's released in response to activities that require sustained effort and lead to delayed gratification. So some examples of this are achieving long-term goals, completing a challenging task, maintaining healthy relationships over time. So when I was spending all of that money mindlessly, what I was getting was fast dopamine. And that fast dopamine was numbing and distracting me from the pain of the depression. And so I've taken that away, and it feels kind of shitty in the short term. But guess what? Next week when we talk, I bet I'm going to feel a lot better because I'm going to start to get that slow dopamine from making this agreement with myself of spending no money other than on necessities, and I'm keeping the agreement. So that's going to start to feel really rewarding over time. So the assignment for this is to pick a goal and make it a, you know, you've heard that cheesy acronym, SMART goal: specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time bound. So my goal is specific. Like, I really sat down and enumerated what it means for something to be a necessity versus not a necessity. So Sam's medical expenses, unequivocally a necessity, and her food also. Food that I actually literally need, like if I'm out of something and I need to replace it, that is a necessity. But if I have 13 cantaloupes at home, buying 4 more, not a necessity, right? I really sat down. I was like, okay, my supplements, I decided all of my supplements are not a necessity. So even if I run out, I'm not going to replace them for the month of May. It can be a fun little experiment how I do without this supplement. Clothes, not a necessity. Shoes, not a necessity. Accessories, not a necessity. Ceramic plates, not a necessity. Massages, not a necessity. But I am getting Botox in my masseter muscles right here. It's like the jaw, it's the TMJ Botox. Because last time I was at the dentist, I was like, hey, what are these lines in my teeth? And she's like, oh, they're stress fractures. And I was like, what's that? And she's like, oh, it's because you clench your teeth so hard that they're cracking. And I was like, that sounds alarming. And she's like, well, you know, you wear a night guard now, so they're probably not going to like split all the way through. But yeah, it's not great. And I was like, should I do something about it? And she's like, yeah, I'd probably get the masseter Botox if I was you. I was like, okay, I'm going to do that. So I had made the appointment before I decided to do the no spend month. So I decided when I came up with this, I was like, I'm going to keep the appointment. I'm not going to push it to June because I don't want my teeth to crack through. Like, that's terrifying. And I really noticed visually how swollen the masseter muscles were. So I was like, okay, let me do one round of it and see how it goes. So I really sat and I was really specific about what the no spend meant and what it didn't. Measurable. Again, I know exactly how to measure whether I've achieved my goal or not. Did I spend money on things that were not necessities or not? It's achievable. It's completely doable. Now, when I first came up with this idea, I did have a moment of like, oh, I can't do that. No, that's not possible. And then I was like, okay, literally billions, not millions, billions with a B, billions of people around the fucking planet do not spend money on anything other than necessities because they quite literally don't have it. So it clearly is possible and it's going to be the case. I have plenty of everything. So it is achievable. Relevant, I actually don't know what that is. So let's move on. And it's time bound. I'm doing it specifically for a month. So pick a goal, make it a quote unquote SMART goal, and do it. Now, bonus, see if you can take a goal that could take something that is a fast dopamine habit of yours and turn it into a slow dopamine reward. So an example would be challenge yourself to cut your nightly glass of wine or decide not to have sugar for a month and instead only have whole food based sweets. You can use my recipes for that, please and thank you. But you get the idea. Okay, now this brings me to the sixth one, and this is where it gets interesting. So if it's not your first time listening to this podcast, you might know that every episode we like to do towards the end of the show, we do a foods that make you blush segment where I talk about foods that have nutrients that support things that we've talked about this episode. So the sixth thing is actually to eat a diet that supports your mood. And I really like grew up with this ingrained in me. I remember one time when I was in high school, I was starting to become a lot more scared of just like random things that didn't scare me as much historically. Like I had become a lot more jumpy. Like my mom noticed when we'd be in the car, I'd like flinch a lot, like if a car was getting close. So one day she came home with a bottle of B vitamins for me. And I was like, what's this? And she's like, well, I've noticed you've become a lot more fearful lately. So I think your B vitamin levels might be low. And I was like, Mom, that's so cute. Like, you can tell the apple does not fall far from the tree. Like, in my first job at a college that I talked about before, the policy job where I was supposed to be, you know, researching energy and environmental policy, and instead I was being sexually harassed by my boss and I was researching wellness topics, a lot of what I would research were actually nutrients that affect your happiness levels. So we're going to talk about some of them today. And you know what? One thing I'm going to say, I was really hesitant to go vegan for many years because a lot of my research would always point back to the importance of amino acids as precursors for a lot of neurotransmitters, which is true, they are. But I'm happy to report that by and large, I've noticed no difference in my happiness levels since going vegan, other than that they've gone upwards. But I don't think that that's because I went vegan. I think it's because like I do eat healthier, but I also just do a lot of other things. Like I've made a lot of other positive changes that coincided with me going vegan. Anyway, so I'm going to list some of the foods. Blueberries, they're really rich in antioxidants and phytochemicals that have been linked to improved cognition and mood. Turmeric, its active compound curcumin is one of the most powerful anti-inflammatories, and inflammation is really linked with mood. Just make sure to pair it with black pepper because it increases its absorption by over 2,000%. Flaxseed, chia seeds, hemp seeds, and walnuts are all rich in ALAs, which is a type of omega-3 fatty acid, which is essential for brain health and plays a role in neurotransmitter production. I used to eat so much fish in order to get this benefit, but I've ironically actually noticed a lot more benefits from eating flax and chia seeds than I ever did from fish. Now, I do recommend if you're eating these seeds and nuts to pair them with antioxidant-rich foods because that maximizes the conversion of ALA into EPA and DHA, which is a more absorbable format of omega-3 fatty acids for the body. Avocados are really healthy fats that support brain health. Leafy greens, the dark leafy greens are really rich in folate, which plays an important role in neurotransmitter synthesis. Low levels of folates have been associated with increased risk of depression. So consuming folate-rich foods may support mood stability. Beets are really good for detox and bowel regularity, which supports mood. Cashews and pumpkin seeds are really rich in zinc and magnesium, which is important for brain health and mood regulation. Cucumbers and melons, they have a very high water content, which helps keep the body hydrated. Dehydration can lead to fatigue, irritability, and difficulty concentrating. So staying adequately hydrated, you support your brain health and you promote more positive moods. Legumes are really rich in folate, fiber, and protein, which can support neurotransmitter function and stabilize blood sugar levels, plus it's good for your guts. Lemongrass. Among other benefits of lemongrass, it's actually a huge digestive aid, and the healthier your gut is, the happier your mood is because of the gut-brain access. And saffron. Saffron's a Persian spice, actually, and it's been shown to be really effective for mood and happiness. Some studies show that it's more effective than antidepressant, clinical antidepressant drugs. It's really great for modulating neurotransmitter levels in the brain. So the assignment for the week is to try to eat some of these foods and also look on my personal Instagram feed. I'm going to share recipes that use some of these ingredients. And that brings me to the seventh tool. And this is the way that we end the podcast every fucking week. And that is gratitude. Now, funny story, when I was in law school, we used to do these like events every Tuesday. There would be a speaker who would come and speak on something. I never went. It was for 1Ls. I never went because that was the one break that I had 1L year where I could run home and walk Sam. So I never attended any of them. But I remember there was one guy who was coming who was like speaking about some like wellnessy stuff. And I was interested in that concept. So later I asked people what he talked about and they were like, oh, watch his TED Talk. So I did watch his TED Talk. And I remember there was like something about like saying three things that you're grateful for. And so then I started this gratefuls habit, and every night I would, and it was usually with friends because I was a big pothead at the time, and we just like smoke a joint every night, and we called it my grateful. So like my friends would come over to do gratefuls together, and we just pass the joint around and we would say three things that we were grateful for. And I'd been doing this for years and years and years and years. Fast forward to when I was doing this episode the first time, right? A few years ago, I was studying the Tetris Effect. I came across Sean Acker. I started reading his research and I read his book. And I remember him talking about like the saying three things that you're grateful for. And I was like, that's weird. I do that every night. And then I kept reading and I realized it was Sean Acker. It was Sean Acker who came to my law school, my 1L year, whose TED talk I watched, who led to me having this gratitude practice for years and years and years. But I was doing it wrong. Now, if it's not your first time listening, you will recall every week I say, don't just repeat the same things. Don't just say what's top of mind. And this is why. There was a study on a group of Amex bankers and where they were saying three things that they were grateful for. And they noticed that there was no change in their happiness levels. And they went and they looked at what they were doing. And basically, this group of Amex bankers every night was just saying the same three things. They're grateful for their job, their family, and their house, or whatever the three things are. And they're basically saying the same three things every day. Like maybe slight variations, but not a whole lot of variations. So here's the thing. For the gratitude practice to work, you have to say three new things every time, and you want to focus on the why. And the reason is because it's as your brain is scanning for the positive things that it strengthens the neural pathways of your brain that are looking for the positive in life. And over time, your brain becomes better at seeing the positives. Studies show that low-level pessimists become optimists by day 22 of repeating this. So I really encourage you to start doing this, incorporating this habit. I go on and off with it. But ever since, you know, I had that meltdown the other day and I decided to do this episode, I decided to be a lot more intentional with it. So now I've just been journaling my positive moment of the day and my three gratefuls every night when I get into bed. So I encourage you to do it too. And we're going to start by doing it together right now. So we're going to end the episode how we ended every fucking week. And now you know exactly why we do it. This is why. So this week I am grateful. Oh, I'm grateful. So I mentioned that my neck is really stiff. I'm grateful that it's not as bad as it was that one time. Like it was like before I went to Australia last year, I think. I literally couldn't move like my head at all. And it was really fucking scary. It's not as bad this time. And I'm really grateful for that. I'm grateful. Oh, I'm grateful that there hasn't been a fucking massive concert with all the cyclists outside interrupting our recording. So that's two. I'm grateful that I made it through the episode without my voice going out because it's been kind of touch and go and the inside of my throat feels not so good. But I think I can actually like preempt it and avoid being sick altogether. I don't know. We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. And, you know, every fucking week I'm grateful for you guys. This episode is a bit of a vulnerable one for me. Like I talked very candidly and frankly about how I've been feeling, which isn't great. And sometimes, if I'm being really honest, I feel a lot of pressure to like have everything figured out because I'm out here teaching every week. But, you know, I'm a human being and I go through fluctuations myself and I'm not always at my best. And this is a time when I'm not my best, but I'm going to take the action steps to get where I need to be. And maybe we can do it together. Maybe we don't do it together. But if you do want an accountability buddy, reach out to me, like I said, email me, because I'm going to use you guys to hold myself accountable. And my biggest challenge for me, like I'm so good at doing, like eating the right foods, doing the mindfulness, doing the this, doing the that. What I'm not good at is actually leaving the house socializing. So that's where I'm going to lean on you guys to hold me accountable. Per usual, if you learned something this episode, if you enjoyed it, if you took something from it, whatever, please, please, please leave a 5-star review. Please share the episode in your Instagram stories, share it with your friends, share it with your family, tell people about it. When you go out, when you meet up with people, be like, holy shit, I just heard this cool thing. You know, the next time you see a blueberry, be like, oh my God, I've actually heard that blueberries can increase your happiness levels. I heard it on this podcast. The next time you see lemongrass, the next time you see walnuts, the next time you see all of these foods, and then buy them and eat them. Okay, seriously, I love you guys so much. Thank you for being here. We will talk next week. Bye.